welcome to the Film Soccer Film Club Round 2. And I've just realised I can't remember what the three choices were that we originally posted up for Round 2. Can anyone else remember what they were?
North Sea Hijack was one, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, North Sea Hijack. Life Juggernaut, yes, that was it. Thank you. And that goes by way of introducing the two guys that are with me. Same from Predator, actually. It's Mark and Steve N., which I got right this time. If you'd like to do a little introduction of you both yourselves.
Morning, it's Mark here. What can I say? This isn't my favourite sci-fi film. It's not even in the top 10. There you go.
Stephen?
Yeah, it's in my top 10, or my top 10 worst sci-fi films.
Oh, dear. I'm going to have to sit here and defend it all through this show, aren't I?
Yes.
God. It's not my favourite either, but it holds a special place in my heart and other parts of my body. What we finally chose was Life Force, which is a 1985 film adapted from a 1976 novel by Colin Wilson called The Space Vampires, which I think that title alone already sets it on a low scale. Surprisingly, I find it was directed by Tobe Hooper, and it was written and directed 3 years after Poltergeist, which is interesting to think of that, because he did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, then he did Salem's Lot, then he did Poltergeist, and then this film, and then he's just done a streak of nothings, really, apart from his Masters of Horror, which I don't think even got too big a shout-out, apart from the fact he directed them. Life Force is a pretty simple film to understand. It's about a space mission where America sent off a space shuttle to have a look at the tail of a comet. I think it's Halley's Comet, actually. And inside that tail is a strange ship that nobody's ever seen before. So they fly in, dock the ship, go and have a look inside, and there's all these strange winged sort of creatures, all dead and mummified in it. However, in the centre they find these three humans in these sealed caskets, and it appears as though they're still alive. So they take them back, put them on board, and begin the journey back to Earth. And then disaster strikes aboard the shuttle, and when it comes back to Earth, NASA send up an investigation team to find out what's going on, because there's no contact from the shuttle at all. And when they get there, they find that the crew are all dead and strangely mummified, though apparently the life sucked out of them. Again, these three humanoids are still in these caskets. So they bring the caskets back to Earth, and that's when the trouble begins, because these creatures are what you could call space vampires who suck the life force out of people. I think that's really the plot we can leave the film with. I think that's enough, isn't it?
I'd say so.
I think you'd say it's enough for the whole review.
I'd say so.
But yeah, it's directed by Tobe Hooper, and I find that quite interesting. I think it's his last good film, apart from the fact that since then he did one episode of the Dark Skies series, one episode of Taken, and two episodes of Masters of Horror. But film-wise, I don't think he's ever managed to live up to either of the three big films he's done. It was written by Dan O'Bannon, who also wrote Dark Star and was writing on Alien and Total Recall, and a film that you might remember called Blue Thunder.
Oh, I love Blue Thunder.
That was better than Airwolf, wasn't it?
Definitely, by a million times.
There was also another writer on it, Dan Jacoby, who was also on Blue Thunder, Arachnophobia, Evolution, and The Philadelphia Experiment. I don't know if anybody's seen that.
Great film. Great book.
Ah, you've read the book as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so have I.
There you go.
I wonder if it was real.
Who knows? Disappearing warships. Could it be?
No, probably not. On the cast lineup, we've got a couple of big names. The lead is Steve Railsback, who probably nobody really knows, but he was in films like In the Line of Fire, and he's had smaller roles in some independent films that you might recognise, including Escape of the Living Dead, which is coming up. He was also in Barbed Wire with Pamela Anderson, if you believe that. Yeah, it all stars people like Peter Firth and Frank Finlay and Patrick Stewart. So, on paper, it looks kind of interesting. And I think the plot sounds kind of interesting as well. But I know you guys disagree, especially after you watched it a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, the plot sounds great, yeah. they never seem to visit it, but they're too busy trying to do special effects and I don't know. This you're gonna have to block or ignore my comment. Cut. Forgot what I was gonna say.
Were you gonna mention something about the nudity, maybe?
No, not at that point.
All right, what do you think, Mark?
I'd actually file this under guilty pleasure. Because it is a terrible, terrible movie with terrible, terrible acting. Some terrible, terrible sets as well. But the special effects are okay, and the story does kind of bolt along at a rate of knots. And I wasn't bored while I was watching it, but it is just rubbish. That's the thing.
But I wasn't bored. I think that's because you can't believe how bad it is at times. And you're actually enjoying the shocking dialogue, the terrible acting, the bizarre special effects at times.
You've just said you enjoyed that. Ah, you've fallen into the pit. You've said you've enjoyed the film.
No. I enjoyed watching it in the same way I enjoy having sore feet and then taking my shoes off.
So it's still a pleasure.
Well, that's a guilty wrong pleasure. Well,
yeah, no, I get that because we've been talking before, and you've been saying how terrible it is. It's not really terrible. It's not awful. It's got a good story, and the whole concept of the story is really good, and the whole idea that comes to fruition at the end of the film, where you look back and see what it's all about. I think that's good, and the idea of these creatures roaming our planet and just trying to suck life force out and gather up to that big ship is good. But the execution in places leaves a lot to be desired.
The trouble is it comes across as a parody. It's like, and we'll probably come to this later, it's like if Shaun of the Dead was remade. It's got that comedy feel, and it's not meant to be a comedy. Yet you can't help feeling as you watch it, this is a joke, this isn't meant to be serious. And I think that's where it fell apart.
Yeah, I think there's a little piece of... Oh, I'm getting feedback from someone. I think there's a little bit that you've got to take a pinch of salt with it as well and realise that when it was made and that it was about... mind you, actually, 1985. I was going to say if it was late 70s, early 80s, like really early 80s, it might have been... might have been more acceptable to see these big over-the-top performances, almost like stage stroke musical performances, if you know what I'm talking about. And specifically, what's that guy's name that's in Spooks again?
Colin Firth?
Peter Firth, not Colin Peter Firth. Peter Firth, really good actor. I mean, he's been in loads of big films like Hunt for Red October, Shadowlands, yeah. Amistad, and now he's leading Spooks. But he has some horrifying moments. And the one for me, I remember, is outside the church when one of the creatures there gathering souls in front of his face. His recoil in action from that is just like some sort of comedy stage musical reaction. It's just horrendous.
And the thing, that would have been edited. That would have been the best they could get from the edit that they did on that scene.
Yes. So, I mean... That does
feel
let
like
it down.
Film. It feels like a 1970s TV show.
Yeah.
Is the impression I got. I mean, some of the acting just wouldn't have been out of place in the Sweeney or the Professionals.
Actually, you're right. That's it. That is really good. That's a good comparison. That's how it does feel.
You know.
And I wonder if that's a bit where we get the nostalgia from.
Maybe. But I still quite enjoyed it. But I would sit down and watch it again, but not for a couple of years. You know, and it'd be a bored Sunday afternoon flick that I'd just stick on. Because I do think that the things that kind of retrieve it from the bin and the dumper, if you like, are some of the special effects. Because I still think they stack up now.
Well, the special effects are really good. However, most of them are just straight out of Poltergeist, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
The blue light, I mean, it's... Poltergeist all over.
Yeah. I wonder if he used the same effects team. Because it looks like it. And I thought some of the spaceship stuff was pretty good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the actually, and I think this is what you'd said to me earlier, Stephen, in the pre-talk that we couldn't remember what you said. I think you talked about how that first section of the film. So when they're in space, when they discover the spaceship, they go aboard, they take it off, they come back to Earth, there's no contact, the other spaceship goes up to see them. All that section is really, really good. Okay, I mean, yeah, used one really too many. But you said that was good, and that set the film up for something it really wasn't.
Yeah, it does start off really good. I think it wasn't the guy that did the special effects from Star Wars, didn't he win an Oscar in Star Wars?
Really?
I'm sure he did.
Well, you two guys talk about the effects, and I'm going to find out.
Yeah, you might have been right, because I forget
his name, though.
I read somewhere it was the same special effects team that did Space 1999, and some of them went on to win an Oscar for Star Wars, so you're probably right there.
Right. Well, I don't know, the head guy did Star Wars.
Sorry, maybe.
Space 1999. But he definitely did Star Wars.
Yeah.
It did look impressive. I mean, the whole start felt like something big. I mean, the music that started, it was fantastic. And it gave this epic Star Wars, Superman feel to it. And then you get back on Earth and you think, parody. It's a comedy, eh?
Yeah. It wasn't stunning, but, you know, I thought that the kind of in space bit was really, really well done. Although the thing that let that bit down for me was a bit of the set design on the space shuttle. So I thought, you know, it looks like they've kind of glued a few margarine tins to the wall there.
That's true. And the way they floated through space.
Yeah.
Looked off.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, at first, I thought, what are those boxes? And then, as I watched it again, they're flying through space.
Do you know what? And I'm looking at the effects lineup, and there's two bunches of effects. Where are we? I've lost it.
The effects and the bad effects.
There's the special effects team and the visual effects team. And there's nobody listed as being the head. So you know how usually you've got one guy up front?
Yeah.
They're just all crew. I picked out the first person in the special effects area, and he's also done Indiana Jones, Full Metal Jacket. That was after Life Force. Before Life Force, he's done Supergirl. Wouldn't we all want to? He's also done Krull, Dragon Slayer, Raise the Titanic, Battle of Britain, The Dirty Dozen.
That's not a bad lineup, is it, that?
That's pretty good, yeah. But I can't find... There's just no...
Is it not John Dykstra that was heading it?
John who?
Dykstra.
He's under the visual effects crew, isn't he?
Ah.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Dykstra.
He's done some great flicks.
Inglourious Basterds. Yeah, that's Caddyshack. Great. That's a great film. Caddyshack.
That's a great film. Caddyshack.
Oh, Caddyshack is awesome.
Special effects work in that.
Oh, I wonder if he did the gopher. So he'd done Firefox, Caddyshack, Star Trek, the original Battlestar Galactica, Silent Running.
What a film.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's had quite a few good titles in there.
Yeah.
So the effects team, obviously the effects team were good, and there's a lot of names in there as well.
Yeah. I wonder why it turned out the way that it did. And I don't mean that in a kind of really negative way, but this, you know, by the crew involved and the director, it should have been, you know, absolutely amazing and taken a shed load of money. So it just makes me wonder kind of what went on from the book to the film adaptation, really.
Well, of course, that's assuming the book is good.
Yeah, true.
I mean, the book might not be good, and they were trying to make something good of it.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
But whether the book was good, I mean, as you said earlier, the plot and the story, I mean, the story and the plot sound good.
Mm.
Yeah, And actually, so when it comes to the end as well, I said this to you, Stephen, you said you were going to watch it again because you hadn't caught it. But the whole idea at the end of what was actually happening with these three on Earth. You know, they weren't just randomly going off sucking people's life force out of them just to keep themselves alive. They're actually trying to bring their entire race back to life. I thought that added an extra dimension to it. What do you mean, really?
I didn't get that.
No, you have to watch it twice, and even then, you get it only because you've been told it's there. I mean, I think that's...
Oh, come on. Come on, the whole...
It's too confusing. Well, not confusing, but they will tell you one thing. Carlson will say, oh, yeah, I did this. And then half an hour later, because that's not how it's going anymore, Carlson recalls something else and says, oh, no, I was lying at that point. What I really did was this. So they keep changing the story as they move along to fit where they are in the film.
I didn't get the bit where he was saying, well, he did one thing and then later said he was lying about it and he did this.
He did. Well, originally he said that all the crew killed themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
I killed them all. He says at one point, yes, I loved it. And then he says, oh, actually, I went in there and we swapped life force or whatever it was.
Yeah, so they did. What's that strange ectoplasm floating around the space shuttle?
Oh, please.
Does it float in space? Is that what you're wondering?
That's the next test that the astronauts can do when they're up in the space shuttle. No, so I get that, but we also have to understand that at that point he had part of the vampire's life force in him, and he was pretty fucked up, and you saw that from his face and his expression and the way he behaved. I don't think he was totally under his own control, and I got the feeling that sometimes he might have been leading the guys in the wrong direction deliberately because she wanted them to. And I never fully trusted him as a character.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got out of it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up on the lying bit and the fact that his story changed. And the thing that kind of got me was the reason why just wasn't given any credence in the film. It just wasn't explained. So I sat there trying to figure it out for about 20 minutes. What's gone on here?
I think the scientist, what was he called? The guy that was obsessed with death.
Is that the one played by Frank Finlay?
Yeah, Hans Falada.
He explains it at some point, how vampires know what was going on. But the way he explains it, you see there's a laugh the way he talks.
Yeah.
You don't listen to his story anymore. I think he does try and explain why they've come down here to get this life force. I mean, the trouble is that the spaceship is full of dead aliens. So, I mean, where's this life going?
No. Well, you think they're dead when you first go there. When they first go there, you think they're all dead. But come the end of it, you realise they're not.
But they're all, when you touch them, they fall to dust.
Uh-huh.
But they're still not dead.
They're still not dead. Hey, they're vampires. And don't ridicule the science of that. they're space vampires, for God's sake. No, so the final scene is she's the conduit for all the forces they've gathered, and what they've done is they've gone out and created other ones to go out and exponentially suck out others' life forces. So you can imagine that sort of, it's like a genealogist tree spreading out like that. And then she comes to the central point and acts as a conduit, and they all their life forces start coming back through those trees towards her, straight up the ship. The umbrella catches them, and they're starting to go into the creatures to bring them back to life. And that's explained very rapidly in the closing scenes in those sequences.
Right.
Okay. Well, it is actually, and I haven't read the book, so I haven't got that anywhere else. That's honestly what I got from the film. But I agree that the Frank Finlay character, the Hans Falada, he's so unbelievable. And the fact that he comes out at the end and just starts talking about vampires and explaining how to kill them from nowhere, like he was the expert, kind of seems a bit odd.
Yeah. And he explains to kill them the traditional way, 2 inches below the heart. I always thought it was through the heart with a wooden stake. It seems to have changed the traditional way of killing vampires.
Well, maybe that was pre all those vampire films you've watched before.
After. Oh, no, it would have been before.
Maybe these are just special vampires and, you know.
Space vampires.
Yeah,
right?
Indeed.
It's the traditional way to kill the space vampires.
Yeah.
possibly.
But how would he know they've not been on Earth before?
I think we might be reading too much into this now.
Unless he is one. Maybe that's it.
Oh, my Lord.
What's Kelson one?
What's what?
Kelson vampire. See, I mean, you get the idea half the time that he's always been a vampire. And it wasn't that she was actually picking him. It's just that she picked him because he's a vampire as well.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I thought it was just handy. He was a man.
Because he already knew her. I mean, when he got to the spaceship, he mentioned something about deja vu. I've been here before. Or I think like I've been here before. And at the end, I can't remember now, when he mentioned something about being part of her. Always.
Yes, that's... Well, I don't get the always bit. Because the whole story, he's been... Well, not the whole story, but he's been saying that she has shared life force with him, and part of hers has gone into him as well. So yes, and he is partly one of those space vampires for most of the story, but he's just not enough to start acting on it.
Or start acting, even.
Yes, well. Well, let's go back to some positives then. You were talking about the special effects earlier, the creature effects of the humans once they've been sucked dry.
Some of the effects were good. I mean, the way they crumbled into dust was good. The way they aged looked good.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about when they've got one of them on the table and it comes back to life. That whole creature effect is fantastic.
Oh, that was quite good, actually. I quite like that in a weird sort of way. The bits I really liked with the way that the spaceship was done, especially when it had the background of the moon against it, I thought that was brilliant. And yeah, some of the aging stuff was pretty spectacular, especially when you consider it was done kind of pre-digital as well.
Yeah.
And I was pretty impressed with that, to be fair.
I think, and for me, it's not that the rest of the film is so bad, they look good. I think it's like you're hinting at there, those effects are ahead of their time, I think, yeah. Definitely. As they felt a bit with Poltergeist.
Yeah, very much so. Whereas Poltergeist is probably worth a revisit and a rewatch and maybe an update with some new special effects. I don't think this one would stack up. But saying that, if I'd seen this in 1985 when it came out, I can imagine myself, you know, being as attached to it as you are. No, I seriously can though. because that's what I was into at the time. You know, it was about special effects more than the acting and the storyline, perhaps. And that's where the film stacks up.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, at the time, I was quite drawn to two of the key points of the film, which would be Matilda May.
Both key points.
Yes. And she plays the lead female space vampire, who features prominently in the film, and, well, naked for most of it, really.
Yeah.
However, I like the fact that even at that time it wasn't done gratuitously. You know, there was never a point when she was popping up on the screen you were going, oh, look, whoa, she's naked again. It's fantastic. It was just like she would have been naked because she'd just come out of the coffin and start walking around.
Mm.
And, you know, you might have been distracted by those 2 points, but you weren't... It wasn't for titillation, I felt. But I think Stephen had other thoughts.
I thought it wasn't. I mean, there was no need for the constant showing of her chest. And
but other than the fact that she was naked. Anyway.
Well, the guys were naked as well, but you never saw their one bit.
Well, you know, there's part of it is physics and framing.
Yeah, and it's a spaceship full of men. Two of them turn into men and one. I mean, the aliens turn into the life form they're thinking of, and you only get the one woman.
However,
I mean,
to be fair, we don't know the sexuality of the rest of those astronauts.
No.
They could have looked into the minds
a long time, so.
And realised, yes, I mean, it's faced a long time.
The lesbian that ends up on the... I'm saying lesbian. It was the woman that she killed. The woman she killed in the park, and then they brought her back onto the table, strapped her down. Even though they had to show her naked. I mean, there was no need for that. Now, granted, it wasn't for titillation, because who's cracking one off to a stone monster? But still, they were there on shore.
Yeah, but, well, Okay, so there's two different points there. Let's address the victim.
There's a third point as well. Okay. The you know when you go to Yorkshire?
Yeah.
He gets that woman and he pulls her blows off and he's shaking her and the SAS guy says, oh, I'd like to sit down and watch.
yeah, that's right.
I mean, there was no need for that scene because, I mean, he was doing it so he could find out where the woman was.
Yeah.
Whose body she was in. And he does all this to get that out of her. But then he knows it's Patrick Stewart anyway, because he says at the beginning, he says, how did you know it was in there? And he says, oh, well, when he touched me, I felt it. So there's no need to go and see this woman later on, rip her blouse off and do all the what followed, because he already knew where the alien was. And I don't think there was any need for those things.
She's resisting. I'm going to have to force her to tell me. Despite appearances, this woman is a masochist, an extreme masochist. She wants me to force the name out of her. She wants me to hurt her. I can see the images in her mind. Do you want to stay? Otherwise, wait outside!
Not at all. I am a natural voyeur.
Okay, so the third one, I agree with that. That did seem like a vaguely sexual scene just for titillation. The whole idea of him watching while he did that, and it was just a little bit of a giggle there. So I agree with that one. The second one is nothing to do with titillation, because it's this effects team showing off what they can do again.
Yeah.
It's not a proper woman. At that time, it's a squeezed up, lacked of all any bodily fluids kind of mummified creature. And I thought that was awesome the way they did that. And yes, even her breasts, they were in the shot. But the whole body way, the way that was, the skin was shrunken in and mummified and everything seemed to be gone from the body, and yet it still came back to life with those big gazing eyes. I thought that was superb.
Oh yeah, the effects looked superb. I'm not saying the effects weren't good.
That's why they wanted to show more of her naked, so you could see more of those cool effects. What do you want? We've spent all this time making a fantastic full size body. Space vampire, but we're just going to cover it up because we don't want to show breasts to anyone.
They could have strapped her down on the chest and the legs and then covered them up and still shown the rest of the body.
Well, they could have, but then she wouldn't have sat up and caused mayhem, which they wanted her to do.
Well, did she sit up? I thought she just exploded.
No, I thought she did sit up but couldn't get free.
I'll tell you in a minute, I'm watching it now.
Oh, there you go.
Big cracking one off.
She just explodes.
Oh,
yeah, she's strapped down. See, it just explodes.
But could have strapped her down there.
Yeah, the interesting thing was, watching that, was the reaction of the actors around her, because a couple of guys were licking the lips. Ooh, there's a naked space alien here who weighs about 2 pounds, because she's got no water in it. I'll lick my lips and make it vaguely sexual.
Well, maybe. However, the whole idea is, isn't it, that they attract the opposite sex.
Yeah.
Or those that are attracted to her, they attract them in the sexual way of a kiss, steal a life force.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, if we think about it, that's what vampires are all about. The whole mythology of vampires, forget this film, forget space vampires, go back to vampires themselves. It's about the sex. It's a sexy idea.
Yeah.
For a vampire to nibble on your neck and suck blood from you. That was the whole idea. Okay, forget the blood bit, that's not too sexy apart from some strange people, but it's a very sexual thing, and it's always portrayed as that. I think this film takes it to the fore and gets rid of those teeth and the neck biting and the blood sucking and puts it more firmly in the sexual arena.
Maybe.
God, I'm doing quite a good job of fighting for it, actually, I think.
You are, yeah, more so than I think you should be.
Well, actually, to be
fair... So it was a sex thing, though, then, on the table, with the tits and the alien?
No, I don't believe... Not that one, no. I think that was about showing off the really cool effects they could do.
Yeah, and that model is amazing.
Is sexual about that?
Yeah.
Nothing.
No, to us. Yeah, it was... I'm saying...
Who would find that sexual?
There's an audience for everything, isn't there?
Well,
could have had a strap down... at the chest, is what I'm saying.
Think that would have looked stupid. So it's one of these things that in films where they go too far to to hide anything that could be vaguely upsetting to the religious central belt of America, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, and God, we can't show a tiny fraction of the nipple in this film because it's going to upset everyone. So they go out of their way to hide it, and then it looks silly because you go, it's like those scenes where people get out of bed, they've just had sex, and they get out of bed by covering themselves up. People don't do that. If you just had sex, you'd be flapping about all over the place. You know, you don't go, oh, now I'm ashamed, I've just spent 4 hours doing all the 15 positions from the first 12 pages of the whatever that book is.
Kama Sutra.
Yes, that's the one, thanks. I can continue my rant of the Kama Sutra. But now I'm ashamed and I'm going to cover up every inch of my body as we lie naked in bed. You know, that's, I think it would have been, just looked a bit daft if they'd taped up our breasts. It's a horrible looking creature. That's nothing sexual about that. And Stephen, you're really arguing the wrong point. You should be going to the first one about the main character being naked all the time.
Well, no, at least she's meant to be naked. She was the...
There you go. Thanks very much.
I'm watching this scene now.
don't you pretend to be getting excited in any way.
I mean, it does look good.
Yeah, there you go. That's showing off
and
the effects.
And she's strapped down.
You are fixating on two things. The fact that she's strapped down and defenceless, and that her breasts are showing. I think it's something about you. I think you like gilfs.
Gilfs? I'm going to have to search that one. Ah, right, yeah. I don't need to search that one, actually.
Anyway.
I'll just take it as the dream.
Oh, dear. So, yes, but on the first point about Matilda may be naked all through the film, I think that my argument there still applies, is the fact that showing her covering up would detract from the character. She's not, you know, this creature is not bothered about covering up. These creatures don't have clothes. They didn't seem to have clothes in the spaceship, so that's not going to be a problem for her. But she's got a single-minded purpose, and it's about infecting as many people as she can to start spreading that sort of umbrella net on Earth to pull in as many life forces as she can, fire them up to the spaceship. She's not interested in decency. In fact, if she's naked, she's going to attract more potential victims, isn't she?
Yeah, there is that, but if memory serves, the first time that you see her on the spaceship, I thought this was really odd, was that you see her in all of her nakedness and wonderfulness, and there's a bloke in a pod next to her, and his bits are covered up by shadow.
Yeah, and I think that could have well been down to censorship laws at the time. Because remember, censorship laws about woolies were very strong up till quite recently, as compared to breasts.
Really?
In Britain, yeah. It's not that long that we could see a penis over a certain angle on screen without it being called porn.
Right.
I think it was just before Nine Songs, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's something ridiculous. It's something like a 15 or 20 degree angle meant it was eroticized, so it had to be shown. But yet you could show every part of a female body and it not being shown, not being thought of as an X or whatever.
Right, fair enough.
So maybe back in 1985 it was even stricter. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe somebody else does.
Mm.
We can maybe get that in the comments. But that could have been it. However, I'm really struggling to argue that point. Yes, the men weren't showing that often. Maybe in another cut they were. And the studio said, look, show more of the woman because we'll get more teen audience.
Mm. How old were you when you first saw this, Richard?
You know what? I'm really not sure if I saw it in 85 or a year or two after. It would have been about then. So anything between 15 and 16, 17, something like that. Mm.
And let's face it, to a 15, 16-year-old, this is a great movie.
Well, it's got all the, it ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do take the point that, yeah, the guys weren't showing as much as she was. But then there's also the issue of when they're walking along, it's a bit harder to keep doing big, wide, long shots to get the willies in the screen. At the same time as the faces, I mean.
Yeah.
Is Stephen still with us?
Yeah. All right. I was looking at...
He was just cracking one off to Matilda Mean.
Funnily enough, have you got it on your PC as well, Richard? Because you want to go to 1 hour, 21 minutes, and 7 seconds.
Okay, I'll insert the disc and start playing it.
And there's a shot where she's lying down, and it looks like she hasn't shaved for years. But what it is, it's the dad behind her. It's her, his head.
1 hour, 21 and...
seconds. Okay, hold on. I'm going to start playing this.
Oh, yeah, I've got it, yeah.
I remember, as that flashed back, I thought, my God. And then, oh, no, it's all right.
Oh, here's the music.
Well, the music's fantastic. I mean, it starts and ends brilliantly. It's just the bits in between.
Anyway, where did you say 1 hour?
21:07.
1 hour, 20:40. Oh, mind you, we might have different cuts.
Yeah.
So I'm just watching Frank Finlay talk about the big sword that's impaled in one of the males.
That's what I've got to 21:07, yeah.
21:01, 2, 3, 4. Cut to the helicopter looking idiotic at each other. Yeah.
What was the total running time on yours, right?
1 hour.
1:56:07.
Oh, 1:56.
And I'm
1:50:122, man.
I'm about the same as well. So it sounds like you've got a different cut.
Yay!
Where did you get yours from, Mark?
I got mine from my best friend who lives across the road, who had it on video.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you believe it? And I then got the video off him and encoded it onto the Mac.
Ah.
So mine's a copy of the video.
And obviously you just did that for convenience purposes, and it's never going to be going further than your computer.
Well, once we've had this, I'm actually going to delete it off here. And not only that, I will set fire to the video and dance naked around it in the garden.
All right.
As a sacrifice to the space vampires, of course.
Well, as a sacrifice to the MPA, probably.
I've got it. Is it 1:24:36?
Oh,
God, on my one.
I just closed it down.
And I see exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a nice shot. To be honest, I wasn't looking at that before. Maybe that was a joke shot.
Maybe.
She is, I've got to say though, she's rather a beautiful woman. And I don't mean breasts alone. And actually, if you look at her now, so if you looked at her IMDb profile, she's pretty damn gorgeous even now.
Mm.
Yeah, but once you're over 16, that's not why you watch a film. Is it? That's not why you watch this kind of film.
Wait a minute. That's coming from you, Stephen. From you who lent me a video that's full of sexual and abuse and physical abuse.
Don't give the plot away. Mark's not seen it.
I've seen it. Yeah, do you mind?
Oh, sorry. Is that the plot? I can't wait until you choose that one for us to review.
But then
you're going down.
The her chest in that film isn't why it's a good why people like it, whereas with this film that seems to be the main reason people have fond memories of it.
I don't know. No, well, my fond memories aren't just of our breasts. I mean, it is the film as a whole. Mm. And those were, I'll admit it, at the time they were added extra. They are. I mean, they're not now. No, she's lovely to look at, but they're not the draw.
I think special effects, I mean, I know we've covered how good they were. I mean, some of them were terrible as well. I mean, the helicopter scene where the blood was pouring out of Patrick Stewart's mouth and politician. I mean, that was poor.
Yeah, I didn't really know. It's funny because I remember seeing that scene at the time and thinking how amazing it was that the blood came up to form the creature. But you know, now looking at it, it's a bit... Yeah, it's very dated, that effect.
And it didn't seem to be for any reason either, other than to show that we can make a red woman. Because she was already in London. They'd already found what they needed to know back in Yorkshire. So there's no need for that, other than he probably thought it looked good in 1985 with the blood pouring out. It just looked a bit ridiculous with all the great effects that had gone on before, just to then see that.
Mm. It's also a good point as well that there was never anything about blood. There's no point for the blood with these vampires.
I didn't think that was blood.
Was it not?
I didn't think it was. I thought it was ectoplasm or life force or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but life force had always been blue up until then and was blue afterwards. The only time it ever went red was when one of them had been stabbed.
Yeah, but this was quite physical, wasn't it? Because the blue one is just, you know, trails through the air, whereas this one was actually physically making something. That's what I figured, and that's how I justified it, but I may have been really wrong there.
I was saying it was blood.
Well, that makes sense. If it did turn red when they were killed, then those two were just killed, weren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay.
It's still way bad.
Yeah, oh God, it still looks atrocious, yeah.
It was a bad effect. When was there not a similar scene in Hellraiser?
No, I don't.
Blood form. Since I've seen it.
There's some sort of horror film that I remember a similar effect being in. I just wonder if it was before or after, and they either tried to replicate it or someone else had copied the idea. We'll see if anybody can get in the comments when this gets posted.
Yeah.
Because I definitely remember that scene from another film, and it was done much better.
The dialogue was, at times you just thought, are they camping it up on purpose? I mean, it just begged your belly. I thought, why are they saying that? I mean, none of it made sense at times, what they were saying. It was just this bizarre script that they then said, camp it up. And I need to find examples.
The
way he says denotice, even though, yes, there is a denotice and it's real. I mean, the way he says it, it would have looked no worse had, give me a second. What was he called? Generation again. It would have looked no worse had Larry Grayson come running on, skipping, and said, right, that's the next one, it's a denotice.
No, not him. It would be the guy in the control tower in an airplane. He'd run in the background and go, ooh! He'd just run off again.
May I ask which of you is Dr. Bukowski?
I am.
I'm Colonel Kane.
From the SAS?
Gentlemen, that last remark is not for publication. This is a denoticed situation.
Yeah, you're right. That line sounds horrendous. However, the cool thing I thought about what that was the realism. Because in the 80s, and I don't think they do it now, but there was a denotice. It was very widely used. Well, not widely used, but it was used a couple of times during some really key points where the government said to the papers, this is a denotice, and they retracted everything without question.
Yeah. Because that's what the bank job's about, isn't it, essentially? Because they use it in that.
Ah, yes.
So, you know, there is that. I mean, going back to the dialogue, my favourite piece of dialogue, and I can't quite remember what it was, but I'll kind of say it as I recall it was. The doctor goes, one of the Churchill's escape pods is missing. And the response is, what does that mean? Did somebody escape? So I thought, have I just heard that? And I actually re-ran and watched it again because I was like, this is just terrible dialogue.
Going back, you say the ship's tapes were destroyed in the fire.
No, they weren't destroyed in the fire. That's what we were told to tell the public. They were erased.
Erased?
Also, the Churchill's escape pod is missing.
What's that mean? Did someone escape?
I don't know.
Mark, that line is... you can see what they were trying to do. You can see they were probably trying to say... do you think it was maybe fired off empty as a decoy or something like that? Or did it contain a... Oh, who knows? But, yeah, that line was done very badly. And there were some atrocious lines. Frank Finlay... it's a shame now because at the time he would have seen as quite a good actor, but now through some of the roles he's done, he's more. I think he's become quite a parody of himself, and it's the same for Peter Firth as well, isn't it? The fact that now he's known for Spooks, and it kind of puts a different feel on the character when you look back on it. But some of the lines were atrocious. Frank Finlay's delivery of the vampire explanations was just bizarre. It came out of nowhere, and it was quite comical. But Peter Firth's reaction to that final male vampire on the steps of the church was just... It was pure pantomime. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I did laugh out loud when I saw that again.
I think a lot of Patrick Stewart's moments were laugh out loud as well. I mean, his screaming was pure comedy. But wasn't meant to be.
Well, the thing I couldn't get over Patrick Stewart, and I sat there watching it thinking, Christ, has a man never ever had hair?
Yeah, I don't think we could. Is there any way that we could find a picture of him with hair? I'm just gonna do a quick search for that. Patrick Stewart with hair. I can hear everybody doing it at the same time. Oh my lord!
Oh, he has had hair.
Bloody hell! He's also, there's a shot of him naked.
Look, there is.
And that's not patched on hair either. That's actual, real hair.
Yeah.
Oh well, he's a fit-looking man actually. Looking from that shot, if you're looking at the same one from me, from.
No, I'm not. But it's probably the same photo. He's in like a Tarzan set of underpants.
Yes, with a headband. Yes, and
that's right. Yeah.
Lots of hair on his head as well as his chest. He looks much better bald with a beard, I think, anyway.
Yeah,
he does. But yeah, that was a surprise to see him on this film, thinking, God, that's really old, and he's still bald.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the acting and dialogue did stink, actually. But In There is a good film, I think. I don't think it was taken... I don't think it was portrayed in the best way.
I think there was a good idea for a film. I just don't think it was executed very well.
That's what I said.
Is it? Sorry. I thought you said it was a good film.
I think it's an okay film. And, you know, taking the time when it was made and okay, there's a bit of biasness here because I saw it around about that time.
I mean, I know it was made in 1980s, but when you think it was made after Poltergeist, I mean, at the beginning you said it was his last good film. It was probably his first bad film. I mean, after Poltergeist.
I don't know. When you look at the list of films afterwards, you can't argue this was the worst.
No, his first bad film.
Sorry. And I think if you line them all up, the three that stand out are Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Salem's Lot, and Poltergeist. Yeah. The four. and Life Force. I think they all stand out in his career. And stand out the same way, by the way. Before you say, it stands out for being bad.
So you can't put that on the same group as those first three.
Can you not?
No, yeah. I mean...
When did you last watch Salem's Lot?
Are we talking the David Soul version here?
Yeah, yeah.
When it was last on TV.
Which was?
Oh, it must be 15, 20 years ago. Really? And I thought it was brilliant when it was on TV. I'll say that much.
I don't think it's brilliant. I think it's really good. But you revisit that, and there are cheesy moments, and there are cheesy lines. But at the same time, there's some awesome scenes.
Yeah.
And I think this doesn't have any awesome scenes or awesome factor to pull it through.
Maybe. You know, maybe the reason for that is the fact it was an English production and filmed in England. Is perhaps the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, that struck me at the beginning. They constantly referred to it as the UK space. The UK.
Yeah.
Every moment they had a chance to say the UK, UK, and it's they would never say the UK all the time. And I think that was, but the budget was huge.
Yeah, it was 25 million, which at the time was massive.
And that, you know, most of that's going to have been blown on the effects budget, absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why the opening sequences that Stephen likes so much are so good. That's maybe where most of the money was spent, those and the creatures. Because those are the kind of things that would have been done up front, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, on Wikipedia, this opened the same day that Cocoon opened.
Well, that's interesting. It's a nice... it would have been a nice choice between the two.
Yeah. Steve Guttenberg or...
I know which one I'd have chosen.
Or Peter Firth. Which one shall I go and see?
Which set of tits do you want to choose?
Yeah.
actually, just going by, I was just scrolling through the credits there to have a look, and the music was by Henry Mancini.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why it's so good. But I also noticed that there's two uncredited writers on the writing credits. This might not be the case, but sometimes when somebody's uncredited, it either means it's because they don't want to credit them or the fact that they don't want their names on it.
Right.
So I'm thinking, because I was looking back to see, well, maybe someone else had a hand in this film, but But maybe that's where it went wrong then, somewhere in that script phase. Maybe we could see that the Michael Armstrong and Olaf Pooley version was better. I don't know. But the fact is it wasn't. It didn't turn out that way. But that leads me on to something else, and I think this could be prime for a remake. If you imagine modernising it, fixing a lot of the problems with the plot, expanding the plot more, going into it a bit more rather than just sitting on the surface as this film did, and exploring what it meant to bring back to life that whole ship, I think that could make a really good remake.
Oh yeah, it could definitely be a good one, yeah. Because this, like I've said, the story sounds good.
Mm.
It's just it wasn't executed well. So a remake done properly with good actors and the kind of special effects we can do these days, it could be quite an impressive film.
Yeah.
Vampire movies are all the go at the moment again.
Yeah, and also neutered vampires, which I freaking hate. But at least these would be neutered vampires with a decent alternative to them.
I think it'd make a good episode of Doctor Who, to be fair, if you just took the story and left the nudity behind, because it had that pace about it, and you can imagine somebody like David Tennant really bringing something to it. But
no, I think you're right, and I think you hit it on the head when you talked about the how it feels like something like The Professionals or something one of those shows.
Yeah, I mean, you remember the army guys in the old Doctor Who? They were just like the army guys. I mean, that's why it felt like a 70s film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good point, actually. That's a bad show for a film that was made in 1985.
Yeah, very much so.
Shouldn't be feeling like that at all. But interesting that Peter Firth, who plays the lead SAS guy in this, is just playing the same character in Spooks to this day.
Yeah, but he's had quite a varied career to get there, to be fair.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's one of these guys like Patrick Stewart that's come from a strong stage presence, isn't he? And I was looking actually back there, I was just looking back at the production companies behind this film, and it was at London Cannon that might have explained why there was such a UK feel to it. The three production companies, one of them was London Cannon Films.
Right.
I don't know. Another one, Golan Globus. they look American. And another one called Eastdram Limited only did Life Force. There was a strong UK influence on the film. Maybe they put most of the money in. I think we've right royally discussed Life Force.
Yes. We did talk a lot about breasts. So.
Well, breasts play a major feature in the film.
I think breasts,
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, don't get me wrong, but
I think we should have more breasts.
The point in the 80s. The breast is what people were watching it for in the 80s, or those that remember it well.
I think that's unfair, because that's a personal slight against me. I was watching films in the 80s for film's sake. I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. No, I watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre just last week on Blu-ray, which I've got to review. Right. And I saw that in the early 80s. That wasn't about breasts or titillation at all. And that's not why I watched it.
No. I just think that fond memories of this one are because of the breast. Not fond memories of film in general, but fond memories of this film.
No, I do think I've got fond memories of some of the moments in this film that aren't breast-related. The whole opening sequences, the idea of the big ship, seeing the big ship above the earth, some of the sequences of the vampires, or the human-turned vampire creatures running about earth in complete panic, and seeing London getting exploding in a big disaster-type movie for the first time I think I'd ever seen it. I thought that kind of stuff was really cool.
I just remember something I forgot to discuss. I mentioned it to Mac earlier, but maybe you said as well, Richard. You know the zombies in London running through the street?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's the pub from what looks like Shaun of the Dead. You know the...
Yeah, I know which pub you mean, yeah.
The Winchester.
I'm sure it's the same pub.
Can you remember where it was in the film, if you find it?
Oh, hang on, here we go. Yeah, About 140 on there, 141.
That's a very interesting thing as well. Okay, so 1 hour 42 on mine. He pulls a sword out of the male vampire, and they really skimp on the effects at that stage, like totally. So the vampire's off screen, and they pull the sword out and look down, and it's already the mummified version from the human it was just a second before. They close up on him again, and they go back to the bench, and he's all ash. So they've spent like nothing on the special effects there for that scene. I wonder if they'd run out of money. Might Maybe. Explain the editing. But then after that,
I've got the pub.
The lead character then looks down and sees the lead space vampire lying in the church, and she's got clothes on. She's got a big white dress on. So I was arguing earlier that there was no need for her to wear clothes. Why would you bother? And there she is, putting on a nice dress.
That's the way to get them off again, though.
Fantastic. Shoots zombie in head.
Just a
60 million run by him. It's called the Maya. Oh, yeah, it's on the corner as well.
Mm.
I wonder if it is the same pub and it's just changed hands.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing they do.
Yeah.
Sorry. They're right outside the door. There's a scene where there's a woman, a live human woman, lying on the floor. And there's the vampire humans all around her. And what do they do? They kick her.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, why would they kick her? They just leap down and suck the life force out of her. Why kick her? Oh, dear.
Well, listen to this. I mean, it would be much less terrifying if you just cut to me. But the way he says it, I mean, it ends on the worst line ever.
That's like an ending scene in Paranormal Activity. I'm not giving anything away, by the way, that I saw yesterday.
What was that like, by the way?
What the biggest pretentious piece of hype ever. My wife does not like horror films, okay? She hates them. She hates being scared by a film. We went to see this. She fell asleep during it. She wasn't scared.
What's it called? I've never even heard of it.
We watched it 11 o'clock at night, came home, she went to bed, no nightmares, no problem.
It's done 100 million in the States, hasn't it, so far?
Well, so that's my next feature, is going to be the argument that box office takings is no reflection on a film's quality.
Well, yeah.
It's nothing to do with it. You can't. People keep saying, oh, but it's taken this. Well, so what? A bunch of people at opening weekend who may, a small percentage would have read reviews, have gone into film to see it. Because that's the choice out of the ones that are there, and I don't know.
It's, the majority of films shown in multiplexes is pretty poor. I know that's a sweeping statement, but
I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
Top 10, and I bet you 8 are rubbish. And it's just like the pop charts as well. I mean, people do buy shite.
Well, it's that lowest common denominator thing, isn't it? It just, you know, they pick stuff that appeals to everybody.
Yeah. You know? Well, look at X Factor, Jedward.
Oh, I saw that for the first time last night.
Oh, I stopped watching it now.
Christ almighty, what is that about?
It's ridiculous. But, I mean, that shows you that it's not most popular is the best.
Yeah, but how often do we at work, Richard, tell people to watch a certain film and then they'll come in work day after and they'll watch some chick flick, regardless of what we've said was a good film?
Absolutely.
We let the right one in. It was a fantastic film. I don't know anybody else that went seeing that.
I went to see it.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, at work, people look at it. Go watch, say, oh, I'm going to watch the film, watch. And you'll give them a couple of examples, and they'll come back and they'll watch Chihuahua, whatever it was called.
Yeah,
it's true, though. It is quite disappointing. But yeah, I mean, okay, so let me not slag it off totally. Paranormal Activity is good. It's good and it's clever in parts.
Sorry, what's it called again?
Paranormal Activity. But it suffers from two, there you go, type it away. It suffers from two big problems. One is the male character is made to be a complete prick, like totally prick, that you don't like, you hate. Right. From within the first 2 minutes, you don't like him. And yet his girlfriend's staying with him, and he's treating his girlfriend like complete shit. And so much so that the audience started laughing at some of his lines, which I'm sure wasn't meant to be like that.
Yeah.
So totally, you're pushed out one of the main characters. So you don't care what happens to him. And you're kind of not feeling sorry for her because she's sticking with this guy. And then the characters make... Oh, no, that's the third point. The characters make all those decisions you'd see in filmology that say don't do it. Like, don't go into the attic. What they do? Yeah. Let's go into the attic when we've just heard the sound and it's the middle of the night. Don't fucking do it. Leave the house. Don't come back. You know, there's some really stupid things in there. You go, what? But the other big point as well for me is the problem with the camera and how it's used. So in Blair Witch, people complained that you wouldn't keep holding the camera up and filming these moments. However, I think in Blair Witch you would, because you're out, you're isolated, you're alone, and at that point they thought they were all going to die. They weren't going to get out of there. In this film, they're in the middle of a suburban community with the police on call, and you think, why do they feel the need to film every single second? And why is the relationship between these two characters so broken down that when she's lying on the floor, bawling her eyes out, hysterical, that he feels the need to pick up the camera and run to her and film it before he touches her? So that, yeah, and those things just, and they all happen really early on. They just destroy the whole feeling of it being found footage and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it only cost $15,000 or something, didn't it? Tonight?
Yeah. However, the rest of it, the scenes they actually film at night are really good and will creep you out.
Okay, I've got to check it out, I think, and
yeah,
make it my own mind, but I've not heard good things about it. But, you know, I've not heard good things about The Blair Witch. I really enjoyed that, so.
Yeah, so did I. I'm quite keen to see where they take the sequel and if they're actually going to just follow on from the first one, where exactly the first one ended.
Apparently the story I've heard is it's going to be a prequel.
Well, that was the old one. So he just, one of the directors had just been talking about it like last week or the week before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he said they're wanting to follow on exactly where the first one finished.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Because, yeah, they've been talking about a prequel for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But he seems to have changed his mind, or maybe that's just the other idea they're running with.
And about Blair Witch, because I noticed there's a prequel for that Paranormal Activity as well.
Is that?
Or a sequel. Well, they're planning on one, yeah. I mean, it makes any money. That's the first thing they think, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and you know what? So far, I won't give anything away, but there's two things they can do, Paranormal Activity. They can go visit the child, the main character when she was 8, and that'll be explained in the film. Or they can redo the whole event again. I don't mean remake, but the only way it could be a sequel in the future is if just the events happen again. That's it. There's right. No other way for it to go. And I think what made it good has been done.
Because the spooky thing about the Blair Witch was how they finished it. And then, you know, stood in the corner, house lights go up, what's gone on there?
Yeah.
And that was a real talking point for me, because I can remember seeing it and thinking, you know, we debated that for hours afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch Blair Witch again.
I watched it not so long ago, and I still really enjoyed it. You know, and it's quite rare that I'll go back to a film like that and revisit it, but I did with that one and thought it was just brilliant.
Yeah, and you know what, I think the negativity against it is because it was the first of its kind, and it was doing something new and something that kind of went against the grain of filmmaking or what the audience would be comfortable sitting watching.
Mm.
And now we see Paranormal Activity and it's normal. And I think that's why so many people are accepting this insane behavior of continually picking up the camera before some of the most important decisions of your life.
Right.
You know, and it's like, if I walked down the corner and I saw my wife lying, no, actually, you wouldn't do that. You'd be upstairs and you heard your wife or your partner downstairs crying hysterically. You go, oh, yeah, pick up the camera, walk down, film her.
Right.
I'm talking to her before I go over to actually console her. You're like, no.
I mean, the film ends fantastically. I mean, it has that great ending of epic film. I mean,
yeah.
The way the music kicks in, the credits roll, it leaves you thinking like, oh, I've just watched a fantastic film. And that's the music.
Oh, I thought you were going to come out with a line that, but I haven't.
No, that went without saying.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's not a great film. And
not a great film, yeah.
I will admit that I think my fondness for it is elevated by the fact I saw it in the 80s. It's also elevated slightly by the fact that the lead female is naked and she looks fantastic. However, I still think it's, for the time it was made, British production, considering the plot involved and the story and where it goes to, I still think it's okay.
I'd agree with the okay sentiment. I wouldn't call it fantastic and I wouldn't call it absolutely rubbish. It's just okay.
But I don't think it was even... I mean, in a way, I mean, I'll probably admit to enjoying it, watching it now, but not for the reasons I should have done. I enjoyed seeing how bad the acting was, how terrible the dialogue was. Some of the special effects were very good. And the music was excellent as well. But I didn't think the film was that good.
I'm just reading some trivia. I thought I'd just click on the trivia. Interesting that originally John Gielgud was reported to be up for the role that was played by Patrick Stewart, that Klaus Kinski was going to play Frank Finlay's role, and Olivia Hussey, whoever she is, I think probably was going to be the lead female. Oh, I know who Olivia Hussey is. Wow, once you see her, you recognise her from loads of films. I think she was in a Bond film, actually. So they were all replaced. There were several actors that were cut from one of the versions of the film. Cannon tried to get Anthony Hopkins to play Kane, and he turned it down.
Really?
Then the film company thought they had a deal with Terrence Stamp, but for some reason that fell through. And it was when Tobe Hooper met Peter Firth that he put him on the film.
It's good to know that at one point they were after people that could act.
Here it says Michael Armstrong and Olaf Pooley did uncredited work on the script, but it's not actually explaining what they did. Just some interesting points. George Peppard was attached to appear in the film at one point. I don't believe that.
What are you talking about, Mr. B?
Okay, so that was Life Force. That was round two of Film Stock Film Club. I think that was the best yet, mainly because we kind of had different views on the film, which is good. But round three is going to be my last enforced choice on everybody. Or not a choice, my last enforced pick of three. And from the three that everyone gets to choose, we've got Capricorn 1, we've got The Parallax View, and 3 Days of the Condor. So it's all those kind of 70s political paranoid thrillers, conspiracy thrillers. So we'll see which one gets chosen from that, and that will make our round three discussion. And I think by then we'll have someone else to join us on the group talk as well. So that'll be interesting. Okay, so thanks for listening. Thanks again to Mark. Mark, you've got a website you should promote while you're on here.
Yes, I have. It's all the W's, markbuckleyphotography.co.uk. Thank you very much.
Well worth visiting that. And Stephen, sorry, I stumbled in your word. I wasn't actually going to call you Steve. I just stumbled when I was saying Stephen. You don't have a site at all to promote.
I don't know.
But you would happily promote filmstalker.co.uk.
Oh, definitely. It's the place to be.
Thanks very much. So thanks again to you guys for appearing. And it remains for me to say thank you very much for listening. And we'll speak to you next time. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The director of Poltergeist and the writer of Alien comes a terrifying new film.
I'm getting a very small radar cross-section.
150 miles long. EGR's confirmed.
Tell them we have an artificial object out here.
In the tail of Halley's Comet, there's something wrong. Something ancient. Something evil.
Jesus.
Houston, we have a problem.
Something's happening to me.
Something hungry that's brought to Earth.
She's destroyed worlds.
That girl was no girl.
We just found a body in Hyde Park.
Life Force.
Close your eyes.
Visited you how?
In my mind.
Let it go!
It's already spreading. You didn't stop it. It's too late.
be with me.
Life Force. The terror has just begun.